When Marcus Aurelius, Emperor of Rome, sat in his tent on the warfront nearly 2 millennia ago, he captured a timeless formula for overcoming life's obstacles. The impediment to action advances action.
What stands in the way becomes the way.
This wasn't mere philosophical musing. It was practical wisdom forged through 19 years of leading an empire through constant war, plague, betrayal, and countless other challenges.
Today, this ancient wisdom has found new life, becoming a favorite of NFL coaches, Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, and celebrities like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who credits Stoic philosophy as fundamental to his success.
What these diverse admirers have discovered is a counterintuitive truth. Obstacles aren't just things to be overcome, they're opportunities to be leveraged, pathways to greatness hidden in plain sight.
John D. Rockefeller was just 25 years old when the Panic of 1857 struck, devastating the American economy and causing widespread financial ruin. While competitors panicked and investors fled, Rockefeller remained extraordinarily calm. He didn't just weather the crisis, he thrived in it, using the opportunity to buy failing companies at bargain prices and expand his operations. This wasn't his only brush with economic disaster. Throughout his career, Rockefeller faced multiple financial panics, yet consistently emerged stronger, eventually controlling 90% of the oil market while competitors perished. What separated Rockefeller wasn't luck or resources, but his perception. Where others saw calamity, he saw opportunity. This wasn't an innate talent, but a disciplined approach he called the school of adversity and stress. He trained himself to remain clear-headed when others lost their composure, to see advantages where others saw only danger. This discipline of perception, the ability to see things simply and directly, without allowing panic, bias, or preconception to color your thinking, forms the foundation of turning obstacles into opportunities. It's about stripping away the added emotional reactions that cloud judgment and prevent effective action.
Consider boxer Reuben Hurricane Carter, who spent 19 years wrongfully imprisoned for a triple homicide. Despite his physical confinement, Carter refused to surrender his inner freedom. He wouldn't wear prison uniforms, eat prison food, or follow prison routines. Instead, he devoted himself to studying law and philosophy, maintaining that nothing essential had been taken from him. When finally exonerated, he sought no damages or apologies, demonstrating that while external circumstances can constrain us, our perceptions remain entirely our own. This echoes Shakespeare's insight that nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. We decide what events mean, whether a mistake becomes a disaster or a training opportunity. This power of perception applies universally and can never be taken away, only relinquished voluntarily.
During the Civil War, General Ulysses S. Grant displayed remarkable composure under fire. When an enemy shell exploded nearby, killing a horse just feet away, Grant continued watching calmly through field glasses, adjusting troop positions with steady hands. When a steamboat exploded at Union headquarters, while others ran away, Grant ran toward the danger, organizing rescue efforts and maintaining order. This wasn't recklessness, but nerve, the ability to maintain composure when others lose theirs. His soldiers drew strength from his steadiness, and his reputation for unshakable calm became a strategic advantage. In our lives, we're constantly surrounded by crashing problems, unexpected challenges, and intimidating situations. Market crashes, family emergencies, professional setbacks, all test our ability to remain level-headed. But grace and poise must precede any effective response. We must cultivate what Voltaire called tranquil courage in the midst of tumult, a combination of defiance, I refuse to be intimidated, and acceptance, I guess it's on me then. This dual mindset allows us to face challenges without being consumed by them.
NASA understood this principle deeply when training America's first astronauts. They emphasized one skill above all others, not panicking. They prepared astronauts by recreating launch day hundreds of times until every sight and sound became as familiar as breathing. They simulated equipment failures, emergency procedures, and worst-case scenarios repeatedly. This intensive training gave them authority over uncertainty and fear. John Glenn orbited Earth while keeping his heart rate under 100 beats per minute, a man truly in control of his emotions. Even when his heat shield was reported loose, he maintained his composure, making critical decisions that saved his mission. The Greeks called this state apatheia, freedom from harmful emotions. Not feeling nothing, but refusing to let destructive emotions take hold. This isn't about suppressing feelings, but rather about maintaining clarity despite them. When facing obstacles, we must ask, does getting upset provide more options? If an emotion can't change your situation, it's likely unhelpful. Consider a delayed flight. Anger won't make the plane arrive sooner, but composure might help you find alternative solutions.
Real strength lies not in pretending emotions don't exist, but in domesticating them. Logic defeats emotion through questions that lead to root causes, which are always easier to address than the emotions themselves. When feeling overwhelmed, break down the situation. What exactly is causing this reaction? What aspects can I control? What's the worst possible outcome? This systematic approach transforms vague fears into manageable challenges. The art of maintaining composure requires practice and preparation. Like Grant's soldiers or NASA's astronauts, we can train ourselves to remain steady under pressure through visualization, breathing techniques, and repeated exposure to challenging situations. Each crisis becomes an opportunity to strengthen our emotional resilience and develop what the Stoics called the inner citadel, a fortress of calm that external circumstances cannot breach. Our minds naturally compress the space between impression and perception. We see something and immediately judge it. Like a deer running from danger straight into traffic, we react without examination. These snap judgments, formed by our evolutionary past, often lead us astray in modern contexts. Whether it's a negative email that triggers immediate anger, or a market downturn that prompts panic selling, our instant reactions frequently prove counterproductive. But humans possess the unique ability to question impulses, disagree with them, and override automatic reactions through conscious awareness and practice discipline. The Stoics developed sophisticated exercises to strip away the legends that encrust ordinary things. Epictetus had students picture great thinkers having sex to humanize them and break down the artificial pedestals we place them on. Marcus Aurelius described glamorous things without euphemisms, roasted meat as dead animal, vintage wine as old grapes, purple robes as sheep wool dyed with shellfish blood. The aim was seeing things as they truly are, free from social conditioning and emotional overlays. These exercises trained practitioners to perceive reality without the distorting lens of judgment, desire, or aversion.
Objectivity means removing you from the equation, your ego, your emotions, your preferences. When giving advice to friends, their problems seem crystal clear because we lack emotional attachment. We can see their situation with clarity precisely because we're not caught up in it. We should approach our own obstacles the same way, pretending they're happening to someone else to see solutions more clearly. This mental distance allows wisdom to emerge. George Clooney transformed his acting career with this perspective shift. Instead of feeling rejected at auditions, taking each no personally, he realized casting is an obstacle for producers too. They need to find somebody who can make their project successful. Auditions became his chance to solve their problem, not his personal validation. He projected confidence that he was the answer to their prayers, not someone groveling for a shot. This reframe changed everything: his energy, his presence, his results.
This difference between right and wrong perspective is everything. When we see situations clearly,
Stripped of our emotional projections and knee-jerk reactions, we can respond effectively rather than react blindly. Perception precedes action, and right action follows right perspective. The practice of objectivity allows us to see opportunities where others see obstacles, to find creative solutions where others are paralyzed by fear or frustration. Through disciplined practice, we can cultivate this clarity of perception and let it guide us to better decisions and outcomes.
Perception alone won't solve problems. Obstacles demand action. Demosthenes, born sickly with a debilitating speech impediment and orphaned at 7, transformed these disadvantages through relentless action. When his inheritance was stolen by guardians, depriving him of education, he created his own rigorous training regimen. He filled his mouth with pebbles while speaking to improve articulation, practiced speeches into the roaring wind on the beach to strengthen his voice, and even shaved half his head to force himself to stay in his underground study chamber until his hair grew back, ensuring dedicated practice time. His daily routine was exhausting but methodical. Hours of voice exercises before dawn, careful study of great speeches, and endless practice of gestures and delivery. He built an underground study where he would stay for months, perfecting his craft away from distractions. When others slept, he worked by lamplight, famously saying, "I have used more oil in my lamp than wine in my cup." When he came of age, he successfully sued his guardians using his hard-won oratorical skills. Though he recovered only a fraction of his inheritance, he gained something far more valuable, his reputation as Athens' greatest speaker. When asked the three most important traits of speechmaking, Demosthenes replied simply, "Action, action, action." This mantra became the foundation of his philosophy and teaching.
This principle applies universally. Obstacles won't respond to perception alone. They demand directed, persistent action. Amelia Earhart exemplified this spirit. In the 1920s, when women were still considered too frail for aviation, she accepted an offensive proposition to be a passenger, not even the pilot, on the first female transatlantic flight. Despite being offered only $500 and dubbed cargo by the press, she seized the opportunity. She endured dangerous conditions, including violent storms and mechanical problems, because she understood that momentum matters more than perfect circumstances. She used this experience to build her skills, reputation, and connections in aviation. Within 5 years, she became the first woman to fly solo nonstop across the Atlantic, breaking multiple records and transforming public perception of women in aviation.
We often delay when we should initiate, jog when we should sprint, giving our obstacles room to grow and our opportunities time to vanish. Successful people throughout history share a common trait. They act decisively while others hesitate. Thomas Edison conducted thousands of experiments. Henry Ford repeatedly rebuilt his engines after failures. And Walt Disney kept drawing despite early rejections. The solution is threefold. Take the first swing without overthinking. Fully commit your energy without reservation. And never stop moving forward, regardless of setbacks. Courage, at its most basic level, is simply taking action, saying, "Yes, let's go," despite imperfect conditions, incomplete information, or uncertain outcomes.
When facing seemingly insurmountable challenges, the process becomes your lifeline. Coach Nick Saban's unprecedented success with Alabama football comes from his philosophy distilled into two words, the process. While other coaches obsess over championships and season records, Saban teaches his players to concentrate solely on the immediate task. Think about what you needed to do in this drill, on this play, in this moment. This approach has led to multiple national championships and created a dynasty in college football. The process provides a way through chaos by breaking difficult challenges into manageable pieces. Instead of being overwhelmed by the enormity of a goal, you simply do what needs doing right now. Do it well, then move to the next step. A quarterback doesn't win the game in one play. He executes each down methodically, making reads, adjusting to the defense, and delivering the ball accurately. Follow the process, not the prize.
Excellence is achieved through sequential steps, excelling at this one, then the next, and the one after that. It's about existing in the present, not getting distracted by the opponent, scoreboard, or crowd. Consider how a surgeon performs complex operations. They don't think about the entire procedure at once, but rather focus on each precise cut, each careful suture. The process emphasizes finishing. Finishing games, workouts, film sessions, drives, reps, plays, blocks, completing the smallest task in front of you and finishing it well. When facing obstacles, we needn't panic or scramble. Like a master craftsman making a difficult piece look effortless, we can take a breath, do the immediate part before us, and follow its thread to the next action. A writer doesn't create a novel in one sitting. They focus on one scene, one paragraph, one sentence at a time. Everything in order, everything connected, building momentum through small victories. Being trapped is just a position, not a fate. You get out of it by addressing each part through small, deliberate actions, not by trying to push it away with superhuman strength. Consider how mountain climbers ascend seemingly impossible peaks. They don't leap to the summit, but rather plan each pitch, secure each hold, and methodically work their way up. The process is the voice that demands we take responsibility and ownership, that prompts us to act even if only in a small way.
The process also teaches resilience through detachment from outcomes. When you're fully engaged in the present task, setbacks become learning opportunities rather than failures. This mindset has helped countless professionals, from athletes to entrepreneurs, maintain composure under pressure and consistently perform at their peak. By breaking down overwhelming challenges into discrete, manageable steps, the process transforms the impossible into the achievable.
George Washington wasn't the glorious general of American lore who directly confronted British forces. Instead, he was wily and evasive, leading a small, under-trained army that avoided large formations and waged a war of defense. His most celebrated victory came when he crossed the Delaware on Christmas to surprise sleeping German mercenaries, a perfect example of exploiting the unexpected. Throughout the Revolutionary War, he consistently chose unconventional timing and unusual approaches, attacking when enemies were celebrating holidays or exhausted from marches. Washington's genius wasn't in advancing, but in withdrawing, saving troops and avoiding traps. He perfected the art of the strategic retreat, particularly demonstrated in the New York campaign, where he successfully evacuated his entire army under cover of darkness. This contradicts our romantic notion that wars are won through direct confrontation. In reality, military historian B.H. Little Hart found that in 280 military campaigns throughout history, only 6.2% were won through direct attacks on the enemy's main army. The other 98% succeeded through indirect approaches, deception, or strategic positioning.
Victory comes from everywhere else. Flanks, unexpected approaches, psychological warfare, and drawing opponents out from their defenses. The ancient Chinese general Sun Tzu called this winning without fighting, achieving objectives by making the enemy's strength irrelevant. When faced with challenges, we must resist the urge to attack head-on. Instead, find leverage, approach from the line of least expectation, and turn opponents' momentum against them. Gandhi demonstrated this principle perfectly. He didn't fight for India's independence. He made the British Empire do all the fighting and losing. Through satyagraha and civil disobedience, he showed that action can mean taking a stand rather than moving forward. His salt march, for instance, didn't directly confront British authority, but exposed its absurdity. Sometimes you overcome obstacles by withdrawing and letting them attack you, using others' actions against themselves. The Russians defeated both Napoleon and the Nazis, not by protecting borders, but by retreating and letting winter defeat their enemies. This scorched earth strategy turned their greatest weakness, the harsh Russian winter, into their strongest weapon. When Napoleon entered Moscow in 1812, he found an empty city stripped of supplies. The same strategy proved devastating to Hitler's forces in 1941. When an obstacle truly is insurmountable through direct means, find ways to use its energy against itself.
Before steam power, Mississippi riverboat captains would use the current's force to slingshot vessels upstream, a technique called kedging. They would send small boats ahead with anchors, then use the river's own force to pull themselves forward. This same principle appears in martial arts like judo, where the opponent's strength becomes their weakness. Sometimes moving backward or sideways is the best way forward. Few obstacles are too big when we can use their size against them, turning their mass and momentum into advantages for ourselves.
Abraham Lincoln battled crippling depression his entire life, yet this personal burden became the forge that created his greatest strength. His melancholy was often debilitating, nearly driving him to suicide twice in his 30s, yet he developed a strong inner fortress that allowed him to endure. Friends would often find him in deep despair, but he consistently found ways to channel this darkness into empathy and wisdom. Lincoln's life was defined by overcoming difficulty, rural poverty in Indiana, losing his mother to milk sickness at age 9, teaching himself law by candlelight, the death of his first love, Anne Rutledge, multiple political defeats, and persistent depression that his law partner, William Herndon, called a tendency to melancholy. These challenges prepared him uniquely to lead a nation through its darkest hour. Unlike other politicians who could lose themselves in partisan rhetoric, his own suffering drove his compassion for others and gave him a broader perspective on human struggle.
When the Civil War came, Lincoln's personal journey had equipped him with exactly what was needed: magnanimity toward enemies, patience during military setbacks, purpose beyond personal ambition, and an ability to contain both humor and deadly seriousness. "This too shall pass," was his favorite saying, which he applied equally to victories and defeats. His real strength was his will, his ability to resign himself to onerous tasks without surrendering to hopelessness. During the war's darkest days, when Union armies faced repeated defeats, Lincoln's resilience kept the government functioning and the war effort alive. Will is the discipline of heart and soul, the one thing we control completely. While perception can be clouded and action can be thwarted by external forces, will remains within us, giving us ultimate strength to endure, contextualize, and derive meaning from obstacles we cannot simply overcome. It becomes the foundation for all other virtues. Theodore Roosevelt built his will through necessity and deliberate practice. Born sickly with debilitating asthma that left him gasping for breath through countless nights, he worked out feverishly every day for 5 years after his father told him, "Theodore, you have the mind but haven't got the body." He built a gym in his family's brownstone, took up boxing and wrestling, and ventured into the wilderness repeatedly to test himself. By his early 20s, he had essentially overcome his asthma through sheer determination.
This early training prepared him for life's many challenges: losing his wife Alice and mother on the same day in 1884, facing powerful political enemies during his trust-busting campaigns, surviving multiple election defeats, leading men in the Spanish-American War, and even surviving an assassination attempt in 1912 when he finished giving a speech with a bullet lodged in his chest. Roosevelt built what the Stoics called an inner citadel, that fortress inside us that no external adversity can break down. His will became so formidable that he would later say, "I am a part of everything that I have met."
When Thomas Edison's factory burned down at age 67, destroying priceless research and prototypes, his reaction was astonishing. Rather than despair, he told his son excitedly, "Go get your mother and all her friends. They'll never see a fire like this again." Later adding, "We've just got rid of a lot of rubbish." Within weeks, Edison's factory was partially operational again. Within a month, workers were on double shifts creating new products. Despite losing nearly $1 million, over $23 million today, Edison generated $10 million in revenue that year. This exemplifies amor fati, loving whatever happens. It transforms what we must do into what we get to do. Like boxer Jack Johnson smiling through his brutal fight with Jim Jeffries, responding to hatred with cheerful skill rather than bitterness, we can wear down obstacles with relentless positivity. The Stoic goal isn't mere acceptance, I'm okay with this, but genuine enthusiasm, I feel great about it. We can't choose what happens, but we can choose how we feel about it. Why choose anything but good? If something happens, it was meant to happen, and we can make the best of it. Every adversity contains fuel for growth. We need this fuel, can't go anywhere without it. That's why we're grateful for it, finding the good contained within the bad, and being cheerful because of it.
When Navy pilot James Stockdale was shot down over Vietnam in 1965, he transformed his 7-year imprisonment into a mission to lead and support his fellow POWs. Rather than focusing on self-preservation, Stockdale embraced unity over self, giving his men purpose and strength through collective resolve. In our own difficult times, we find strength by focusing on others rather than ourselves. When we are stuck with seemingly impossible problems, we can ask, "How can I make this better for other people?" This shift from I thinking lifts the hopelessness and gives us purpose. The great law of nature is that it never stops. Just when you've navigated one obstacle, another emerges, and that's what creates opportunities. Life is a process of breaking through impediments, a series of fortified lines we must overcome. With each challenge, we develop strength, wisdom, and perspective as competitors fall away. As the Haitian proverb says, behind mountains are more mountains. Elysium is a myth. Overcoming one obstacle doesn't lead to obstacle-free existence. The more you accomplish, the more stands in your way. Knowing life is a marathon helps us conserve energy and keep perspective. Each battle is one of many, each making the next easier. Passing one obstacle simply proves you're worthy of more.